You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Guidepost. Captain Cody Rubner here on a sunny Monday morning, Monday afternoon down in Stuart, Florida. Tony's looking a little bit chillier than I am. I think we got 75 and sunny here today. It's about as nice as it gets. Tony's looking like he might have sparred with a snowman or two in the past 12 hours. But Tony, other than a little bit cold and staring in the face of the impending winter, how are you? How are you feeling today? And what's your outlook for the week?
How I feel is irrelevant. Let's get into the meat and potatoes of all of this, because I feel like we just kind of hit the pause button for a second after these horrible meetings.
A lot happened in a short period of time.
Yeah, and I just want to tell all the listeners that I know y'all follow us as best you can, but we had, you know, Menhaden just got thumped in the Atlantic on that one. And then I told the team, I'm like, we're screwed. Like, if this is what's going to happen, we're going to lose stripers and redfish too. And then that set the stage for just, you know, another Menhaden debacle in the Gulf. And it was just like machine gun back to back to back. So you know, we're not listening to like a recap, because I'm sure anyone who listens to this podcast cares and did some of their own sleuthing on social media. So I mean, we're just going to kind of talk about it more than anything, right? I mean, just so you can kind of hear our perspective. So, you know, the Menhaden meeting kicked off and just went up in flames, you know, almost instantly. I bet nobody can guess what terrible states and jurisdictions led the charge on that. Haha, that was a joke, Cody. Yeah, but here's the bottom line. Here's a little cautionary tale for everyone. When we adopted ecological reference points 6 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was, we intertwined the management of striped bass and Menhaden. And I guess when you're idealistic, you look at that and you're like, oh my gosh, this is so great. You know, we're pushing the frontiers of science. And we're going to be able to look at this and know how much the resource needs, and we're going to manage this better, and this is the future. And then you hear the state of New Hampshire, someone who should have been all conservation on striped bass, be like, well, I don't know, we probably need to lower the reference points on stripers. And the little light bulb in your head goes off and you're like, holy mackerel, they're doing this to kill more Menhaden for the lobster industry. And you're just like, well, I didn't have that on my bingo card, because I just thought that there was some humanity left in fisheries meetings. And then, you know, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, well, they decide to trade their Menhaden vote, because they really don't have any quota for Menhaden, for Virginia's redfish vote. And then, you know, man. Then all of a sudden, you know, the wheels just start coming off, the bridge is shaking, and the train jumps, and all you see is that coal stack just going down the ravine, and you're like, my goodness, this is what it's come to. So,
backdoor horse trading, right? The thing that's, I don't know, one of the grossest things for me, right, is the debate over where and where harvest should be in a commercial conversation with regards to quota. But then you look at what that industry has and hasn't been harvesting. And this has happened. We talked about this with striped bass, right? We talked about it with Menhaden at a significantly larger scale of total poundage. But it's, I guess, insulting to anyone with common sense to debate the budget that you don't spend towards, right? Like, so fighting over, all right, well, next year, we just can't handle this. We're going to take this. Let's take this instead. We'll take a smaller cut. If these cuts are never getting down to where the fishery has been hitting. I mean, you're literally taking away something that they've been unable to achieve, which is zero, right? So when you cut something off the top of something that is not reached, you are taking away zero. The fact that that gets danced around in front of you as any sort of anything is, it's just really insulting, I think, to people with any sort of common sense, right? And it's been irritating on Strat Bass and obviously men hating at this scale, right? To vote for what they voted for, a 20% cut, and with what the fishery's been doing in the last half decade, it's just unrealized, right? So the data told you there was such a nightmare of an issue, and they proposed an unrealized solution. And it's just really aggravating, especially for the people trying to do things the right way, and with the end game just being the resource itself and not even their own interests.
Well, let's take a step back, because I brought up big changes in New Hampshire. But we're going to take a little step back. So the meeting before this one, the lobster industry set the stage. So super quick, I am not a lobster expert, but I would say that I probably follow it closer than 99.9% of the people on this planet, because it shows me how bad things are going to be for us. Because for basically the lobster industry is a bunch of thugs and they get whatever they want. You know, like, let's put it this way. Susan Collins won't sign a bill to fund the government unless there's a 6-year reprisal for right whale interactions with millions upon millions of lobster pots in the Gulf of Maine, which is where they go to feed their calves once they're born, and the rest of us have to go 10 knots if our boat's bigger than 35 feet. But they, you know, because, like, you never see right whales with lobster gear hanging off them, right? So, you know, they don't give a hoot about us. So they did, I think the stock assessment took 7 years. So I want everyone to, if you're listening to this in your car, I want you to look at any change lying around in your cup, if you're old like me and you actually buy stuff with cash still. And I want you to pull a penny or a dime up, and I want you to turn it sideways. That is about a 16th of an inch, and that is the increase that the lobster industry had to take to make sure that the lobster fishery was sustainable, and they threw a conniption fit. If you're not familiar with what a conniption fit is, take an ice cream cone away from a 2-year-old, and that's pretty much how the lobster industry acted. And really, you know, Maine had a great fisheries director. His name was Pat Kelleher. Pat's driving home, listens to one of his staff in the meeting where they're explaining to these chuckleheads that they need to take a 16th of a percent increase to basically sustain the fishery. And I'm going to tie this in. It's relevant. And Pat turns his truck around. Pat drives to the meeting to defend his staff. And Pat tells one of the lobster guys who was hollering at the staff to go F himself in not such nice terms on the record on camera. And Pat got an early retirement package. So just, you know, decades of great work, fisheries director's really hard job. And he tells one obnoxious, knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing cretin to F off because he's treating one of the staff members horribly. And what do? They fire him. That's a great message to send. So I don't know if any of you have children. I'm sure a lot of you do. But if you have a petulant toddler, you don't keep giving them what they want. You know how many times my son bit me when he was a toddler? Once. Other kids have biting problems. Other kids have other problems. Mine bit me once because I bit the bejesus out of him right back. And he looked at me and I said, "Hurts, doesn't it?" And we pretty much settled that as father and son and moved on. So my point here is, you keep giving these people anything and everything they want, here we are. And all of this rolled over because they wouldn't take the reduction because Canada's going to catch more than them. And wah, 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 wah. And here we are. The governors wrote a letter to the ASMFC, said, "We're not going to follow this of Maine and New Hampshire. We're going to do what we want." And it started this whole breakdown, this chain of events to what manifested itself at the Menhaden meeting. By the way, I'll leave Massachusetts out of this. I still think they're a very good state. But Maine did vote the right way on Stripers. New Hampshire did not. None of them voted the right way on Menhaden. We've overfished by 275 million pounds for 6 years. They gave us a 20% reduction, which basically takes nothing. Did not save one single fish. Not one. Because we're not catching that. And we're not catching adult fish. No one's seeing adult menhaden. Biggest menhaden we're seeing are 7-8 inches long. And by the way, to our credit, we tried. If you look at our position, we said, hey, don't take this from the bait industry. Take it from Omega. Did that happen? Nope. Did anyone bring up they could have started another addendum, an allocation addendum, and they could have gotten this done by the end of the year. Did anyone even try that? Nope.
Well, because Tony, it felt like when that news came out about the overages, everyone's reaction as a fishery manager or public official should have been, oh my God, how did we get here? How did that happen? Tony, sitting in that meeting, listening to each individual state representative, did any of them feel like they had the tone of, oh my God, how did we get here? No, there was no shock and awe of how did we get in here and how did we get into this position? It all just kind of seemed focused on individually what they all needed out of it. So no one said, oh my God, how did we get here? It was
perfect.
What am I going to get? Wait, this happened? Okay, I'm not mad or not mad. Just make sure I'm not affected. Yeah, right?
100%.
That's how it all was. And that was also sickening is, like when we put out that news through all of our channels, I mean, shock and awe, like horror, right? People could not believe, people were disgusted to see that scientists supporting the public officials that are supposed to represent them and these various commissions and state levels allowed this to happen, made these mistakes, and it perpetuated for so long, right? They were disgusted, and nowhere in that did not translate to the managers in any sense. There was no, oh my God, how incredibly horrible that we've got here. It was, well, are we really overfishing? And this ain't going to affect me, is it? And that was nauseating.
Yeah, 100%. It was nauseating. And, you know, we were talking about backdoor deals. Now, look, do I have a smoking gun? Did I have my phone on and I took a video of the conversation? No. This is secondhand. Four people who had seats around the table told me that it was pretty much being openly discussed that Florida traded the Menhaden vote for what they wanted on redfish. And I heard that if I say the word allegedly, Florida allegedly made that trade with Virginia, I'm pretty clear. But you know what? I don't even care. It's a podcast. People talk about their opinions on podcasts. You traded votes, and everyone knows it. Pretty disgusting. Just foul. But, you know, it is what it is. We move on. So, you know, we lose Menhaden, and then that sets the stage for Stripers. And then that's where we heard the real disturbing, like the stuff that shakes you. You know, like New Hampshire being like, well, golly gee, we probably should look at the reference points. And you're just like, what happened? Like, what on earth happened? Now, I'm going to say this, right? Because people, you need to understand this. They projected a 17% increase in harvest. It was like a 44% decrease. So, you know, by the books, well, hey, we're going to rebuild in 2029. We don't need to do anything. And I'll just say this. Boy, that's an easy position to defend because it's about as simple as it gets. Status quo. Don't do anything. And you're like, and then we're like, you know, page 473 out of the 2,498-page document, you will see figure 1.4 associated with table 3.7. And, like, look, we're just doing the best that we can. We want to be honest. We want to give you all the information. I saw the, instead of the 17% increase, the 44% reduction, and it was like red flags popping up like dandelions in my yard in the summer. Like, faster than I can mow them down, that, you know, they're popping up. So you're telling me that everything's fine, that we projected a 17% increase and it was a 44% decrease. Anyone who does this, even on like a, just a concerned citizen level, and has ever run any business or anything before, a peewee t-ball team, you look at that and you're like, holy, how did that happen? Two ways that happened. One, you forgot to carry the one. Two, we got a lot less fish than you think we have.
I really wish I had the digital wherewithal to clip in the exchanges I had with our lovely Striped Bass meeting hosts many moons ago. Remember where I said, explain how its numbers would go up. Harvest would go up, fish mortality would go up. Explain how fishing mortality would go up if we bumped the slot this way. And they said, because there's so many more small fish, and you cannot understand our grand brilliance of how we've calculated the numbers to show you how many small fish. You just don't understand how fisheries are set up and da 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 da.
Cody, isn't that the same reason, buddy? Isn't that the same reason that commercial discards went from 30% to under 3%?
Right.
They're just not seeing any.
So we were the idiots who said, slide the slot this way because those fish don't exist. They said, how dare you not understand our brilliance? You would, if we did what you're proposing, we would slaughter millions of small fish. And then since then, there's been like three consequential decisions, all of which based upon the premise that there are no small fish. So it's just, it's like we're playing this two-sided coin where their perspective of do nothing or kill more always wins. Right. If the data comes in and says we're over harvesting, the data is wrong. And how dare could you not see how incredible this fishery is doing right now? And if you flip the coin and it lands on the other side and the data is low like this, well, see, the data is actually good now. The data says we shouldn't make a change. So there really is nothing to win if their perspective wins, no matter which way the coin falls. Because the answer isn't data, right? The data is only good when it matches their narrative. And if it's not, then we go at the data first, as opposed to what reaction or what action should take place in response to the data.
I don't. Here's the deal. And it's what we said. It was the whole basis of this association. We're really bad as a society at counting fish. We're even worse at projecting them out. So it's an A-B decision. Do you want to push it to the edge? Or do you want to be a little more conservative? Striped bass are not going to eat all the crabs. They're not going to eat all the sand eels. They're not going to eat all the white perch, tog, flounder. It's all lies. It's just stupid lies that dumb people get up to a podium and say because they keep wanting to kill fish that aren't there. It's amazing that this whole world has interacted before side scan and GPS and cell phones, and everything was just fine. Everything was just fine. Stripers and bluefish and weakfish and flounder and everything else. Yeah, there were ups and downs and things like that, but man, yeah. No, they're not going to eat all the crabs. So in any event, the reality is y'all didn't do a bad job. I don't want you to think you did a bad job. You can go on the supplemental materials from the meeting and you can look at the thousands and thousands and thousands of comments. And there's ones that are like, I named my tackle shop from after my son. And then there's ours that are like, please conserve striped bass for the future. You know, we are who we are. That's it. And we're not going to change and we're going to keep going. And I'll be honest, team ASGA, this management action was not going to save striped bass. It wasn't. I don't know what else to say. Might have done was helped solve the math problem that they have turned this into instead of the actual conservation of the species. So they could pull up a chart a year and a half from now and go, look, we rebuilt. Job well done, team. Let's go on. And what they don't show you is the right-hand side of the graph. And it looks like, what was that guy's name? Sir Edmund Hillary? Like, looks like the guy who, you know, climbed Mount Everest on the way down. You know, like, that's, it's going to be terrible. And I will tell you this much. If we can't predict the harvest for next year, and we miss it by a country mile, as in over 50%, 17% increase, 44% decrease. That's a country mile. Do you really think they can tell us how bad it's going to get in the early 2030s when none of these fish are around? And we're still letting states like Virginia and Delaware and Massachusetts kill giant females? Is that, you think they can do that? I don't.
You want to throw a massive party for all the massive trot lines that are set up in the bay right now?
Oh, yeah. That and pound nets.
Yeah. 1,000 feet of pound net across the entire... Sorry. Yeah, no, I didn't see the other 700 feet.
Yeah, that would have been a small one. So look, this is, you know, we have trained an elite fighting force for striped bass conservation. We love you. We're here for you. And this is kind of what the future is going to look like. First of all, I am sitting here in a sweatshirt. I'm bummed because I don't have my wool cap on. That's how cold it is. And it isn't even Thanksgiving yet. It snowed here a little bit. I saw it already. And it is a whopping 42 degrees right now on the eastern shore of Maryland. I walked outside today, and I swear to you, I think my eyeball froze. So I hate this. We see this about every 10 years. I think it's going to be so cold, and it's going to be such a brutal winter. There's already snow on the ground in Western Maryland. It's the mountains. It's like 3 hours from here. But there's snow, man. And it's just cold. It's awful. But anyway, I do not believe anyone that says the Chesapeake Bay cannot generate striped bass anymore. What we've done is backed ourselves into a corner where we need perfect conditions. And we just may get them this winter because it's so cold right now. I hate it. So that's number one. Okay. We gotta pay attention to these fish and if they spawn, we gotta protect these young fish as they go through the system, and can't let these idiots kill them all like they've done with every other Goodyear class in the last 20 years. That's one. Two, there's a lot to pay attention to. We have the total just unmitigated disaster. Look, if you're going to do a fishery survey and you're going to base stock status, population, you know, all that kind of stuff off a survey, you ought not to get the order of the questions wrong. You should probably know that stuff. And Noah ain't getting Noah mercy from me anymore. You had one job, you pinheads, and you messed it up. And now,
well, at least they were there to vote with us, right, and support us in conserving the resources that they made some grave data errors that could have inflicted significant issues in the management of, right?
Oh, no.
They were super supportive. I'm sorry, wait. They were on 100%. The wrong side of conservation each of the last three major meetings?
Oh, no. Yeah, totally. They suck. And to make matters worse, not only do they vote against conservation, but, like, you know, let's put this in perspective, right? We're a bunch of government employees, you know, not really pushing the envelope of how hard you can work. That's not really synonymous with those folks. So not an entrepreneurial mindset, really. And then you find out that you totally screwed up the survey that you base everything on in recreational fisheries. And then you come back and you're like, hey, we got the questions out of order. I think we're going to solve this. We're going to flip the order of the questions and then do it again. And you're like, I have an idea. Why don't we try to modernize the way that we do things, collect data, and how we estimate the size of the fish? Nope. There's two questions. We're going to put them in a different order, and that's going to make everything better. Wow. I mean, I'll tell you what, Cody, I think they're right when they give us that impression like they're giant minds and we can't comprehend their grasp. My 5-year-old niece probably would have said, hey, Uncle Tony, if questions wrong, we flip. Like, wow, guys. I mean, my faith is restored in that federal agency. Let me tell you. Man, I was worried for a second. So there's that.
And while we're on the topic of the federal government again, the fact that they chose to not even vote with the states trying to fight to conserve these resources, but actively stood on the other side and voted against, because they're not one for necessarily jumping into the fray. I mean, they can null vote, right? And like they have in the past, where they abstain and are not pro or con on something that they think maybe states should be trying to figure out. So you've had them sit on the sidelines for past campaigns where there's conservation driving campaigns. And then this time to see them actively not only just sit on the sidelines, which is basically a no, but to jump in and give it a firm no when it comes to striped bass, when it comes to menhaden. I mean, I think people like Mr. Appleman representing NOAA should have to give us the like they do in the NBA when there's a call at the end of the game. Give us the 2-minute report. Why don't you explain how you came to those votes? How you thought NOAA Fisheries and the tenets that NOAA Fisheries is based on would drive you to vote against conservation based off of significant data inaccuracies, especially when your federal body itself is one of the main drivers of data inaccuracies. So please give us a 1-paragraph explanation of why you chose less conservation.
Well, if I can get my hands on the text that they were sending around, because lest we forget, the federal government was shut down. So I find it compelling that there was one person from NOAA there, and then the day before the meeting, there was another person that sent a text to some commissioners saying which way they were going to vote. So what's going on?
Yeah, they can't find unity to go work for us, work for we the people, the whole country, everyone, all looks, colors, affluence, everywhere in between, right? They are shut down for weeks until they whatever, but they pop in just enough to fuck it up when it comes to voting on fisheries, right? How thoughtful of you to continue to participate with your time. Maybe you should have just sat on the sidelines for that one.
Yeah, so, you know, that takes us directly into striped bass, which they also voted terribly on. And look, this is kind of like a hodgepodge, you know. So just to get back super quick, we have the FES, we have the benchmark stock assessment, we have the news that we broke on the last podcast about natural mortality being way higher in the bay with potentially a new strain of mycobacteriosis. And then you have the catch and release mortality stuff out of Mass DMF. And they're all that information is going to be pumped into that new stock assessment. And, you know, we may see something that doesn't even look like anything that we've ever seen before when it comes to target threshold, you know, where we are with the stock, you know, the whole 9 yards. So, you know, point here is between now and when that stock assessment comes out, all of these things are going to be fleshed out. And just like always, we're going to be on the calls. We're going to be in there with ASMFC. We're going to be talking, you know, those nightmarish, well, thank you for such a lovely presentation. Oh, no, thank you. Thank you for a lovely compliment. Well, thank you for a lovely compliment on a lovely presentation. No, thank you. Is it lunch yet? I have an event in Annapolis that I have to go to. I'm not even concentrating.
Point of privilege. I'd like to use a point of privilege. We're out of mints in the bathroom. Thank you.
Who took the last hotel chocolate chip cookie? I wanted it.
Let's not even start. When we heard the phrase, sorry, my head's not even in this room right now. I have a meeting tonight that I'm thinking of, an event tonight. I mean,
while determining the next 20 years of Redfish management.
Sorry, I'm just not here mentally right now.
Oh my gosh, sorry, did I do a motion to support another motion with a substitute motion? Sorry, I have an event in Annapolis tonight, my head's just not in the room. Oh goodness, what a clown. I mean, what a clown. Like, you're so narcissistic and idiotic that you would say that on a microphone?
Yeah, why would you say, even if it was true, we all got lives going on. Even if you're true, you're caught zoning out on something. How disrespectful to any sort of position that serves the common resources of the greater general public, and say, sorry, I'm not in the room when I'm making decisions about your future.
Yes.
Imagine if your doctor said that mid-surgery. Sorry, I was up late last night and I was watching Cops. Couldn't sleep. My bad. Snipped the wrong cord.
Actually, that happened to me. I'm just kidding. So I think that's a good segue to get into Redfish. So look, we're going to go back. We're going to talk about stripers. We're going to tie stripers in. And then we're going to talk about Redfish. And there's a reason why. We're actually leave Menhaden out of this one, because we already talked about the horse trading with Menhaden. But let's talk about stripers and Redfish. Here's the deal with stripers and Redfish. All of you striper advocates, all of y'all, know how incredibly difficult, how high the bar is to even begin to comment on these issues. The documents, we don't have to go through this. It's very difficult. And look, from our perspective, we make videos. We do blog posts. We do podcasts. We do everything to try to educate people on this stuff. And frankly, we'd say just make your own decision. You take whatever position. Here are our positions. Take whatever you want. This is all this insanity distilled into, you know, what you need to know. And I think that's a pretty big service. Here's the deal. The chairman of the Cyanids board, Cyanid is Latin name for the drum family. So we'll just call it the Red Drum Board moving forward. Chairman of the board, less than 1% of the comments, less than 1%, two out of 295 comments, said to lower the spawning potential ratio from 40 to 30%. That is essentially the reference points for striped bass. Lower the bar because we're overfishing. He went on record and he said they didn't know what they were commenting on. His name was Doug Haymans. My understanding, not my words, other people that have known him in his career at Georgia DNR. Political hack, does whatever he's told to do, does not leave a legacy in Georgia for conservation. Said on record, they didn't know what they were talking about. Then, now we're going to take a step back. Now, it said how hard this stuff was to comment on. We're going to run down a list of things that disgusted us at this meeting and make me believe that the wheels have come off at ASMFC. At a striped bass hearing, a sitting commissioner got on, raised their hand, commented first at the comment hearing, and said their position. While I had people on the meeting texting me going, isn't he a commissioner? Why am I not eating dinner with my family? That's one thing. Second thing, South Carolina DNR had ASMFC come in. ASMFC gave their presentation, just like they do with striped bass on redfish. They said, thank you so much. ASMFC leaves the room, and they sat down and they said, well, we're going to do our own presentation with our science. And we don't need to take a 28% reduction. We're only going to take this much of a reduction because our science says this. Two of the options on the redfish document were, what science do we use? What size reduction do we take? Oh, I forgot to mention this. Mysteriously, their system didn't work. So the 50, 60 some odd people that we had online weren't able to comment. And then what do they say? Well, sorry, the system isn't working. You can email your comments in. That's good enough. To which I got a flurry of text saying, it's fixed. Their jig is up. They fixed it. I'm not wasting my time. I'm done. Wow.
Reminds me a lot of the environment when we did the Captain Sir Clean Water fight against Senate Bill 2508, which is they're not prepared for the storm that came to them, telling them which way to drive the policy on the best half of our public resources. And when you have nothing to say, Tony, and you don't have any sort of scientific or general logic basis to build off of for your retort to these public campaigns, you know what you tell people? Well, you guys are just dumb. You guys just don't understand it. And they pulled that a lot at the Senate Appropriations meeting that we went to in Tallahassee. All they did was just, yeah, we hear what you're saying, but you're all just misinformed. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and you're just all misinformed. And that's what happened here. What was the number? 98%? I forget off the top of my head. 97%? 98%? It was like 2-3 public comments against. Yeah, you guys just don't understand. It's their quickest path out of getting out of a difficult conversation or actually backing up the decision that has already been made in their head that they're about to make, right? Because you didn't make a wrong decision if everyone on the other side is just totally lost in space and can't understand the grand brilliance of it.
I don't even think they care if they make a wrong decision.
No, they want to make their decision.
Yeah, they just want to do whatever either the person that controls their pension told them to do or where they think they'll get yelled at the least. Because that's what it comes down to. And look, there's some decent commissioners left. There truly are. And if anything gets turned in the right direction, the genesis will be with those individuals. But I mean, the rest of them are either morons or they're just getting told what they should do and how they should vote. That's it. You know what I would do if I was a commissioner? Sorry, I just laughed a little bit. First of all, like, I think it's safe to say this will never happen because I don't play ball. But if somebody told me you have to vote this way, I'd go, okay. And then I'd go to the commission meeting and I'd say, that chucklehead told me to vote this way and I'm not going to. I'm going to vote this way and kick me off. What do I care? I don't care, but I'm not doing what he's told me. I don't care. And I guess, I don't know. I guess they weren't raised by a mother who had a switch tree in the backyard where you had to walk into the backyard and pick the switch off the tree that she was going to beat you senseless with.
I just don't think a lot of these people end up in the positions they do. It might not be possible for a lot of them to end up in any sort of, regardless of how impressive or powerful that position is. You just don't get some of these spots where they're appointed or elected unless they dance the way dance monkey, right? Like you're saying.
Yeah.
How you get here, right? Oh. Is like this is a system that breeds people who do what they're told by other influences. How many of these people on any of these voting boards are just extremely well-studied and dynamic individuals who took their some sort of version of public service to on behalf of the community that they love, that they grew up in, that they want to protect?
I can name a handful. Yeah, a handful. But to get back to the political hack at Georgia DNR, he also went on record and said that he has political headwinds for any reductions. So the political headwinds are one state congressperson who runs uncontested in a red coastal district saying that his threat was that he would put a bill in the Georgia legislature that all decisions would have to go through the Georgia legislature instead of Georgia DNR being able to make them. And I got to tell you, like, go ahead. I mean, call his bluff. Because what's the difference if he can threaten you to make a terrible decision or if you have to go through the legislature for every they're already negatively impacting the process, you gutless whatever. We'll just leave it at that. I mean, let's play chicken. You play chicken with me, I hope you got good car insurance and a good orthopedic guy. Because let's play chicken. Fine, do it. Do it, you know? The 1,200 people in your district that voted for you, you're gonna destroy an iconic fish like redfish. And by the way, Georgia's, I would call them pre-bellum, as in pre-Civil War, pre-bellum fisheries regulations. Like 5 redfish, I'd have to take my shoes off to figure out how many sheep's head and speckled trout their limits are. It's just ridiculous. They had the easiest job out of any state. They could have just made a little tweak and started to rebuild the stock. And basically you have this feckless bureaucrat that's, you know, I don't know, just wrecks it. Shocking. I mean, here's what I'm going to say. We're going to do a whole other podcast on what's happened in Louisiana with Menhaden, because that thing is just getting going. This is just like the redfish stuff in Louisiana. They just passed a notice of intent. The notice of intent has to go here, and then it's 30 days to comment, and then there's going to be the holidays, and then it has to go to the oversight committee in the Louisiana legislature, and, you know, and then the governor can veto it, and, you know, all of this mess.
Not to mention that those boys down there aren't too much for being told to sit and stay. So when that just went down the way that it did, you're going to see a lot of those same faces that were packed in the room, or those who weren't even allowed in the room who were standing outside in the driveway. You're going to see a lot of those guys more riled up and more impassioned and more participatory in this process going forward. I think the fact that it lost, it's only going to double in its size, right, when it comes to all these different levels. So a lot more to come there, because I think as this plays out, this is also going to be... Yeah, good God,
let's not even peel the Band-Aid back on that one, dude. Like, let's not rip it off.
I think you'll see some of what happened, the lingering effects and sentiments of what happened in the Atlantic start to seep into the conversation down there, too. You know what I mean? So that's definitely worthy of its own, because that's going to be a monster.
Yeah, so to review, Cody... Noah turned their backs on us, but I really wouldn't say they were ever friends anyway. I mean, if I could come up with a kitschy acronym that basically said disappointment, that's
give us a press release. Maybe I should submit a formal request by email, Tony. I would like a written response of how you got to what Noah's core tenets are and what the entity is supposed to be built on and what it's supposed to represent and who it's supposed to represent. Tell us how you got to those voting stances.
Oh, like, and here's...
Back it up. Don't. It's just gross that they get to vote and run, right? There's no accountability whatsoever. And there's never been until stuff like this.
Speaking of no accountability, you know, basically we're in a situation now where every state that has a fishery that they don't like the fact that they've not beat the brakes off of it for the most of this millennia, and that there's a reduction, that they just run around and say, we're going to go out of compliance. We're going to leave ASMSA. We're going to go out of compliance unless you give us what we want. That's not fisheries management. It's a joke, which is what they're turning ASMFC into, a complete and utter joke. Look, I'm going to give you a news flash, Cody. I think you know this. We have integrity. So this go around with stripers, we saw what was going on with redfish. We saw what was going on with Menhaden. As I said before, this wasn't going to save stripers. And we kind of sat back and, like, I'm not going to say we pulled a punch. We did everything that we normally do, but we didn't do some huge sign on letter. I mean, we did everything that we normally do. But what we saw in advocates was complete fatigue, people that don't trust the system or the process anymore. And, you know, I fully believe that if we had gone guns a-blazing, then we could have did what we normally do. We could have won. You know what? Hold on. I said what happened in South Carolina and Georgia at the meetings, but I forgot. We had a couple of our guides on a dock in New Jersey. They're fixing to go to the meeting, which was in the middle of nowhere, Manahawkin, on a weekday night. They were going to go, and they're talking to another charter captain, and he says, hey, y'all going to go to the meeting? And they go, yeah, you know, we're going to speak up for stripers. And he goes, there's no point. They had a secret meeting with a couple of charter guys and a few tackle industry folks, and they already decided what they're going to do. It's status quo. This is 3 days before the public hearing in New Jersey. That was the conversation. And we can't let Pennsylvania get out unscathed. Anybody seen how big Pennsylvania is? They had their meeting in the corner of the state that's right on the river that separates Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And they had every idiot from New Jersey drive across and say what New Jersey wanted at a Pennsylvania meeting. So what I'm just... the picture that I'm trying to paint here is that when you suppress comments, when your system doesn't work, when you make it almost impossible to go to a meeting in a huge state, and you got to drive all the way across the state, and then you find out that the decision's already been made, or
or when you see public officials complaining about their role. No one forced you to take these positions. So if you're talking about events and dinners, we've heard it on other meetings. Well, we're going to speed this one up and wrap this up. I remember one specifically, a certain person that I will not name right now, saying, well, we don't want to be here all night. No one puts you in these positions. So if you don't care to actually go through the process in a way that gives everyone in the general public the opportunity to contribute, don't take the position. Plain and simple.
Oh, no, Cody, it's much, much worse than that. Because, you know, we got to do Robert's rules in all these hearings. You know, I'd like to make a motion. I'd like to make a substitute motion. Let's vote on the substitute motion. Substitute motion becomes the main motion. And they never even talk about the main motion. There was a commissioner who made a substitute motion on one of the redfish issues, which was like, do we do A or B? And the chairman, the political hack, Doug Haymans, he says, well, no, let's not do a motion. Let's just vote on this issue. And if this doesn't pass, then you can put your motion up. And then that person, the person who wanted to make the substitute, was like, well, what if I want to do a substitute of the substitute? It's Robert's rules. They broke their own. No, we're just going to vote on this. Let's vote on it. Like, you make your own rules. I don't get to make my own rules in life. You idiots do. And then you can't even follow the own rules that you make and adopt yourselves. And then you want us to believe in you? You're a joke. You're a joke. And if you don't think you're a joke, I am going to formally invite Doug Haymans from Georgia DNR on this podcast. You can easily find my email or my phone number on any letter that we've ever written. If you actually ever look at supplemental materials, I doubt you do. Because we use big words. You're invited on this podcast. I will not edit a word of the podcast. I will tell Cody not to edit it. And me and you can talk about redfish. And you can tell me how I didn't know what I was talking about when we're done. I invite you. Whatever day, whatever hour, whatever works, I will clear my schedule. And what I do is way more important than when you do. But I will clear my schedule. You can come on here, have as much time as you want, and we'll go back and forth, and we'll see if we truly understand redfish. Because you're a joke, and you ran the meeting terribly. You're an embarrassment as a chairman. You're an embarrassment as a redfish manager. And I really look forward to having you on the podcast. So let's get back. You know, you have suppression of comments, making it almost impossible for people to comment. They tell us form letters don't work, but then with the new website, they have a new form to fill out. No one told us that there was a new form on the website. You have meetings in the middle of nowhere. People still show up. You let a bunch of chuckleheads, like in Georgia again, I'm going to pick on Georgia pretty hard. You let a couple of chuckleheads talk for 20, 30 minutes, and then you tell the 50 people in the room there's not enough time for all of them to comment. That just drove, you know, halfway across the state because you didn't have a hybrid meeting. Listen, moving forward, if all meetings are not hybrid, all comment meetings, based on what we've seen, the direct suppression, the negativity, and then like the thugs that our professional people have to walk past that jeer and make stupid comments and are just below us. I'm just going to say it, below us in how they behave in what should be a professional arena. You know, it's basically like the homeless guy on the corner screaming at his shoe and we have to listen to him for 30 minutes and we now don't have time to make comments.
Oh, so you're saying below us. Like below us. B-E-L-O-W.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify
it's
that.
It's a Southern thing.
Yes. So, the way you were saying it sounded like a little bit more of a command, but we'll continue.
No. You know how to spell it. So anyway.
B-E-L-O-W.
Yeah, yeah.
For our lawyer.
Versus a bellows. I know you thought about a bellows, you know, to get your fireplace going. I thought you probably thought I said that. So anyway, you suppress comments, you ignored comments, your system didn't work. you have meetings in the middle of nowhere that nobody can attend because we actually have jobs. And basically, not only do you suppress all that, and then we come out and give great comments and more comments, then you ignore that too. And then people are supposed to trust the system. I don't even know what to say. So, I mean, look, if you're us, you do things professionally. You put your best foot forward because we represent people that live and die by our ability to be good advocates. But I will just say this. We're going to get more aggressive. And we're going to call people out. I didn't call anyone a name. But we did say why people voted the way they did, how the system is broken, how everyone's losing faith, how there's not a single thing that you manage that's doing well besides spiny dogfish. And what is there? Six people who work in one processing plant and a couple of gill netters that get after them, and the whole fishery's worth like a couple million bucks. Their whole fishery isn't worth one weekend in one small town in Cape Cod for striped bass. The whole fishery. So congratulations. You can manage something well that absolutely no recreational angler wants to catch and no restaurant wants to serve and is kind of a, you know, a key part of the ecosystem, but a little bit of a nuisance for us, you know? So anyway, way to go on those spiny dogfish team ASMFC. Looking forward to whatever's next on the endangered species list that you guys have put on the bullet train to that designation.
Yeah, I mean, my takeaway from all this, and I'm going to try to be the glass half full guy, is can you imagine what it would have been like if people like you, the listeners, people who take time and participate this in this process and have all sorts of varying different backgrounds and perspectives on how and where we should get to it, but your main goal is conserving the resource. Can you imagine how bad all this would have been if you guys weren't in the room? If these are the results we get to, oh, with no, all of y'all fighting for joke. Good,
that's not a joke.
Think about what it could have been.
That is not a joke, what you just said. We're not like placating you, like there. If you hadn't been in there, squirt, you know, man, it would have been a lot worse. That's not what we're saying. It would be a catastrophe. Like, can you imagine?
Just your presence and participation is what makes the hurdles for them to jump to do whatever the F they want to do much harder. You create those hurdles. So even if they get over some of them, the reality is this thing's on a pendulum. And if you weren't meeting it in the middle, man, this thing would be swinging all the way off.
Listen. What did John Clark say at the, I'm waiting for him to walk in like a pilgrim's outfit, you know, with like, or like a Revolutionary War soldier with like the tricorn hat and like a bell. You know, no one wants a striped bass to die of old age. Like,
yar.
Like, what are you talking about? Like,
hear ye, every fish must end up in my stomach or in the soil upon which we grow.
I mean, like, what are you saying? Like, how does no one around that table be like, hey, John, I think it's time to sit down, you know? Like, no striped bass should die of old age. It's much better for you to die in the gill net on the way to spawn, where Delaware didn't even, like, contribute to the spawn anymore, in that area that you increase the spatial area where gill nets are allowed, which just happens to be in the exact area where Delaware Bay gets really thin when they're on the final stage of their spawning run. Yeah, no, oh no, that's great. Where
I'm just imagining,
look,
one,
man,
of the guys,
I gotta
that,
stop, because I'm getting wound up. You say what you
I'm just
say.
Imagining one of the, you know, we're connected with a bunch of guys who are really skilled drone videographers, right? And I'm just imagining like a bay boat sitting on a point with like a drone video, and there's a school of striped bass like just about to come in within casting distance, and then they all just have heart attacks and die of old age.
Yeah.
And then
it's
all just starts sinking down to the bottom. Yeah. And it's like, well, would you look at all the fishing opportunity we just lost there? They just live too long. How dare our managers let these fish live too long? It's just like I'm pretty sure I texted you at least once during all these three key meetings. Though I think by the third one, I was so emotionally dead. It was a little disconnected. I had an event in Annapolis that night. I think I texted you. I was like, it just feels like we're in another dimension. Like, it feels like you couldn't make up some of the things some of these people are saying.
Cody, listen, we haven't, you know, obviously we're growing everywhere, but, you know, the core, our nucleus are striped bass fishermen. So you don't have to look it up. They moved the spawning potential ratio down from 40 to 30%. They voted in using state science instead of regional science. And then the direction of the addendum was, you know, that efforts going through the roof in the Chesapeake Bay on redfish because there's no striped bass to catch anymore. And you had Virginia at three fish, Potomac River at five, Maryland at one. And they said, you know, let's get out in front of this and let's do a little conservation for redfish. And their conservation was like, everyone at three fish. And you're like, hold on a minute. So Virginia gets to stay the same. Because you have to understand, like, if I will never forget, I was unfortunately stuck in a meeting before COVID about black sea bass, summer flounder, and scup. The scup have a 50 fish creel limit. And this guy, you know, not smart, was like, well, you know, our fleet, you know, we could do 45 fish instead of 40. And the scientist is like, sir, you have a little chicken parm on your shirt, but besides that, you'd have to go to like 35 fish before it even made a dent in the percentages, because no one's really going out and catching 50. So if you think that anglers are going out and catching and keeping five slot redfish in the Potomac, moving them to three is maybe like, I don't know, you want me to guess, 5-10% cut and harvest? It's still not something that people go into the Potomac and say, I'm red fishing today. The bulk of people are still fishing for stripers, catfish, white perch, you know? So, and then give the whole rest of the bay, Maryland, you triple them. Three fish. That's conservation? So if you ever thought you lost one on stripers, redfish anglers just got the skin slapped off their face. But we're not done. And to make matters worse, this was the first management action on redfish 23 years. Every 6 months, we're in a new fight to our death with stripers.
That is the one thing when people, if someone in striped bass conversation is like, man, this thing's just moving so fast, I can't keep up with it. You know, didn't we just do this? Now we're just doing this. At least they actually have a little bit of a justifiable response to the cadence at which management's been going lately.
Listen.
But when it's your first time you have to meet and do anything consequential in 10 years longer than I've existed on this planet, then I don't want to hear any whining.
Oh, Lou, listen, striped bass advocates, that 10th Mountain Division, like the most deployed division in the military. Redfish? I mean, they're playing the tuba in the Marine Corps marching band right now. Like, they just started. And I kept telling them, like, they're there, you know, it's going to be okay. We're going to be doing this until we're both dead. Like, this is how it works, you know, and we will be. So, you know, buddy, like, I didn't say a lot of and ums. The dogs didn't bark. I turned my phone off. I did my checklist. Hopefully my microphone isn't picking up my breathing or whatever else annoys you. I think it was okay, right? You didn't hear all that mess, right? Did we did better this time?
I'll edit out the farts and sneezes.
Okay, cool. Cool. That's good. You should got to put that on your business card.
Yeah, exactly.
So I edit farts and sneezes. So yeah, I mean, the next one is going to be Menhaden in the Gulf, which is going to be a spicy one, you know, just like.
Yeah, we just had to hop on here and chop it up a little bit and kind of lay the foundation for where we're going. I think most people are probably aware, you know, we have a specific cadence online and we've been really intentional, and I've been drilling Tony on this on the last, 4 or 5 plus years, right? Which is We don't put out BS to put out BS. So we put out stuff that people need to know, that people need to have as a card in their hand to participate. We don't do the weekends
what's
here.
What's your favorite crankbait, Cody?
Yeah, comment your favorite bobber. You know, we don't do that crap. We don't do what's your biggest striped bass you ever caught. We really keep it core and want it to be that when people see our badge logo, our handles, our name pop up, hey, this is probably something I should give a damn about. We try our best to be really, really intentional and spare you all the junk. And so when you see us go quiet after those last couple of votes and we put out one or two things about maybe some science updates, but when you see us go quiet, just know that there's something, you know, it's intentional. It was not a lack of response to what has transpired in the last couple of meetings. But the reality is we had to, you know, take a step back, took a couple L's, and we have to look at why we took those L's and how we got into those places, how we got in those situations. Thankfully, we're heading into the holidays, and we hope everyone takes a month or two and has a little rest and break from the chaos, and that it's not too stressful when it comes to family and finances. But it's time to take a set here and figure out where we're going with this stuff. We took a couple L's, and we're going to bounce back in a major way.
Well, here's something. Let's end on a positive note. One of my friends sent me an email and said, hey, I just listened to episode 187 about the natural mortality. Goodness, 187. We've done this 187 times? And then figure the other 20 that we just flushed down the toilet because we had been drinking or we cursed too much.
Yeah, those are incriminating. I was under the influence. I'm just an asshole, I guess.
The ones that I'm confident you erased off that hard drive. So anyway, this was going to be 188. We used to do like, hey, you know, send us a question and we'll send you a pair of sunglasses, that kind of stuff. If y'all have any recommendations for what show 200 should be, because it is a bit of a milestone. I think it is, because it's not like we're professional podcasters. I'm sure you guys figured that out. But send us, you know, info@saltwaterguidesassociation.org. If you have any ideas, hey, I'd really like to hear another shop talk get a couple of guides. We'd love to hear this guy, whatever it may be. Give us, y'all are the listeners. Let this be our gift to you. What do you want to hear on the 200th show? And we'll do our best to make it happen. I think that'd be a pretty cool gift to all of y'all. And we thank you always for listening. We respect the heck out of you for caring.
A lot of really cool messages. A lot of new member. You know, we've had paid membership now for maybe a year and a half or so. Nothing too crazy, but it's just people's way to contribute to the specific campaigns that we're leading that they're proud of or want to be a part of. For anyone that doesn't know, if you go sign up for a paid membership for ASGA, you can pick which project. Hey, I'm a paid member. And striped bass, the Albie project's really what I care about. Oh, I love all this Jack effort. Whatever, you can pick where you want your couple dollars a month to be allocated to. And Tony, we had a flood of new members in the last couple months, and this is probably the most rewarding thing and a great thing to build on that. Thank you. Is not once did we say, "Hey, we need your support. Go become a member." We were just working like dogs, nose to the ground.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it was over 1,000, right?
I mean, I don't know what the exact number was. I don't have it open. I'd have to swap over my windows here. But, I mean, just a massive flood of people and a lot of really cool messages along the way. Thank you so much, all this information. I wouldn't have known this was going on. So that was really cool. And that's probably the most heartwarming thing, right, is when they show their appreciation for your hard work. And none of it was asked to be reciprocated, right? So to all of our new members, if this is one of your first podcasts you're listening to because you joined us during this last Menhaden fight or whatever it may be, we're proud of all the people who've been there with us since day one. And just as proud as everyone who, you know, set down what they were doing and said, I'm joining this fight within the last 24 hours. So thank you to new, old, and everywhere in between. But that was a really, really cool part of the last couple months, Tony, just rewarding in the sense that people feel or showing their appreciation for the guidance. And it just makes us triple down, right? What we're going to do in 2026 is going to be three times bigger and three times louder.